The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. An $11.6 billion plan to reform school finance in Texas and overwhelmingly passed both the Texas House and Senate. It's on Governor Greg Abbott's desk for final approval. House Bill 3, or the Texas Plan for Transformational School Finance Reform, includes $6.5 billion to improve public education and pay teachers, plus $5.1 billion to lower school district taxes. The bill increases basic student funding for many Bexar County school districts, and also SB 3 does so much more. How will this bill positively impact the daily lives of students and teachers in Texas? We're joined by Diego Bernal, the Texas House Representative for District 123 here in San Antonio, Vice Chair of the House Committee on Public Education and member of the School Finance Commission. And welcome back to The Source. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Our number is 210-614-8980. Call in with your questions and comments about school finance and about what they came up with in Austin. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org. So, Representative Bernal, people are calling this House Bill 3 a big deal, right?
I'm calling it a big deal. I think it's a big deal. I'm excited about it.
I mean, this is something that's been a long time coming.
It has been a long time coming. I think that we've put school finance off for a long time. In fact, it seemed like we were waiting for the courts to tell us what to do. And at a certain point, we realized that if we did that, and I'm using the royal we, right? A lot of us have been wanting to do this for quite a while. But the more you put that off, the worse things get without any attention. And so at a certain point, people, especially voters, said, you guys need to focus on the things that mattered. And this was top of their list. So we finally got it done, and I'm thrilled about it.
It sounds to me like you're using the bipartisan we.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no way around the fact that this session we had a tremendous amount of bipartisan cooperation and did an incredible amount of work together, both sides of the aisle, and the House and the Senate, honestly.
So what made the difference in this legislative body to make this finally happen?
I would say two things. The first thing is that we had a fair amount of money to work with where we could really be ambitious in a way that we hadn't in the past, but more so after the last session, which was so divisive with SB 4, the Show Me Your Papers immigration law, and all the discussion around the bathroom bill, I think voters, especially Republican voters, said, these are not the things that we care about. This is not what we send you to do up there. And they spoke very loudly at the ballot box. And so Democrats in the House at least picked up 12 seats, including seats that were supposed to be untouchable. And it wasn't so much that I think the state, although I think it is getting more and more purple, I don't think the state's becoming blue or those districts became blue. I think Republican voters said, you're focusing on the wrong things. Let's send a message and send people who want to focus on the right things. I think that message was received. And all of a sudden, here we are focusing on school finance.
Well, so there are some people who were not thrilled with school finance. There is still a constituency of Tea Party voters in Texas who think that the legislature, you know, gave too much away to the Democrats. It's a budget, but it's a 16% increase from the prior biennium. Mm-hmm. They say there was a lot of conservative people who are pretty irate about that.
Maybe, but I think that part of the problem that Texas has had in the past few years is that leadership has only been responding to that base. They've only been acting as if it's the primary election that matters and the rest don't. And now what's happening is that you have to think about both your primary and your general. And what that means for people is you have to focus on the entire state, not just a small segment of the state. So there's always going to be people who are angry with the things you do. There are some Democrats who aren't super thrilled about pieces of the bill. I understand that. But you have to take bold action. You have to get it done. And we did. So the fact that there are some people who are mad means we did our job.
All right. A lot of people have a lot of expectations for what the legislature can do.
Sure.
Politics is the art of the possible.
Sure.
And so people are saying, well, why didn't you do this? And why didn't you do that? Mm-hmm. And you, seems like, went up to Austin with a very concrete vision in mind that this was going to be the issue that you were going to try to deliver. Right?
Always, always. From the moment I got here, that's been my number one focus is school finance.
Okay, so the number is 210-614-8980. Let's go to the caller, Annalise. Annalise, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. wanted to show my enthusiasm for the passing of the bill. I think it's really great that they're acknowledging teachers need wages. But at the same time, I feel that support staff and assistants always get left behind in things like this. Currently, I work for a local school district as a pre-K assistant, and I'm only making $10.77 an hour. So my two-week paycheck is right under after health insurance is right under $450, which to me is not a livable wage. And I think I guess I would like to know how I can advocate for, I guess, support staff, because they do help students every day. Sometimes they're there earlier than the teachers, sometimes doing after-school duties and everything, and I just feel like we get left behind and things like this. And what can I do to help, I guess, advocate for assistance like myself?
Anna, thank you for the call. And Representative Bernal.
It's a great question. So first of all, in the bill where we talk about teacher compensation, there is a portion of it that is designed to go to other people, including support staff. It's still left to the district's discretion what that looks like, but we've given them the money and the flexibility to do some. I don't want to oversell it, but there is the opportunity to do some to improve the wages of those folks. In terms of advocacy, I think that coalitions are important. So one of the problems we ran into is if the teachers are advocating by themselves and the nurses are advocating by themselves and the counselors are advocating by themselves, it's not as powerful as if they band together. So for the support staff, I absolutely think they should advocate and talk to and reach out to people like me and other representatives. But at the same time, education is such a broad and complex issue. There has to be some sort of unifying or unified voice as well. So working in sort of individual corridors or lanes isn't as effective as joining coalitions. I don't mean, and this is really important when it comes to advocacy, don't always speak through a representative of a group. I think it's better if you hear the individual stories of people, but that it's a shared experience across different employees.
Where was this money coming from for providing more money for schools and taking less money from property taxes?
Well, it comes from a variety of places, but I'd start off by saying the assumption is that it's all new money, and it's not. I think, you know, some of the Tea Party folks might say we have a spending problem, but the comptroller, for the past few bienniums, have said you have a saving problem. You're putting away more than you should, and to the point where you might hurt your credit score. You should probably spend some of the money you're getting, because the Texas economy has been pretty steady and including, and it's been improving somewhat for the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years. So we're now spending not all, but some of the money we normally would put away, and we've had some good years with oil and gas.
So are you talking about the rainy day fund?
There is some rainy day fund money in here, absolutely.
And that's a sustainable source for this. You know, this is a cost that's going to be there budget after budget.
Well, to be fair, the cost is going to increase every 2 years, but the state is also growing every 2 years. If we have years like the last two or four, we should be okay. But what I also say is that there's no version of this that will not require some sort of new revenue. We have to identify new revenue. Doesn't mean we have to raise taxes, but we have to identify new revenue. So there's, put that on one side. On the other side is there's also an assumption that every dollar we've been spending has been spent the right way. I would argue, many would argue, we haven't been spending that money the right way. This is in some ways a course correction to that.
And so with more money going into certain school districts, there's a formula. It's crazy, formula upon formulas.
Right, well, almost every single school district in Texas is getting an increase.
And here in Bexar County and some of our school districts, they have a long time have been dealing with less.
That's right.
And what are they going to be looking at?
Well, it's different. I mean, one of the problems that we have in Bexar County is we have 16, 17 school districts. That still doesn't make any sense to me. But essentially, the way this should work is the ones that are wealthier or more middle class will get they will certainly get an increase, a healthy increase. For some, like Alamo Heights and soon to be Northeast, or it was about to be Northeast, their recapture payments will go down. But as you go down the socioeconomic spectrum, so let's say you start with Alamo Heights and you end up with, let's say, Edgewood is getting certainly more money per student than Alamo Heights is. Even though Alamo Heights is doing well, Edgewood's doing better because there's a recognition that you have to counter the effects of poverty in order to get students to perform the way you want them to.
Back to the phone lines, 210-614-8980 with State Representative Diego Bernal. And Virginia is on the line. Hi, Virginia. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'm calling about what the status is of, I believe it was Senate Bill 10, the mental health funding bill that was blocked on a point of order by Stickland, and what did it get tacked onto another bill, and what's the status of it now, the mental health fund?
So it, you're right, it did get taken down by another representative, and then it was added to another bill as an amendment. The entire bill was added as an amendment, and the bill that it was attached to has passed. And so I think that we're okay. The funding is there. All the policy is there. It's just we have to get it there in a different way than we expected. It was a surprise and a shock to a lot of us, but the bill is fine.
And what does that bill do?
The bill has a tremendous amount of money for mental health and social services for students. So we're talking about counselors, trauma counselors, school psychologists, and the like.
And that happens a lot. When something dies in the legislature, then maybe it'll get attached to something else. And that might be the reason. That was the reason that Governor Greg Abbott gave for a veto for a domestic violence bill.
That's right. Normally, you don't see bills as large as the one that the caller mentioned attached to another bill. Sometimes an amendment will add a few lines here or there to expand something or add funding to something. But this was a wholesale merging of two major bills. That's uncommon, but I'm glad we're able to do it because the program and the funding is wildly important.
So the bill that Governor Abbott vetoed was Senate Bill 1804. It would have required bond information about domestic violence offenders be entered into a statewide database. And then it was vetoed by Governor Greg Abbott because there was something in there about this nuclear waste facility in West Texas. And it seemed like these things had nothing to do with each other.
Yeah, you know, what happens at the very end, you're racing because there's a clock. And when the clock strikes, everything stops. And so what happens is at the end, there's a frenzy of amendments. And sometimes you just sort of trust the person who's up there saying, this is related and it's okay. And then you say, okay. That was something that was sort of attached on very quickly, and we had a rough time getting it off.
Yeah, and it shows you the veto power that Governor Greg Abbott has right now, where he still has some time left in that veto pen. We will see what he can use it on and what we're watching. If you've got a question or comment about that or about the education bill or about school finance, about property taxes, about teacher retirement pension, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the recent legislative session. With us in the studio, District 123, Representative Diego Bernal. Got a question or comment for him. He was the vice chair of the House Committee on Public Education, member of the School Finance Commission, in the center of making HB3 work and get passed. And now we're waiting to see what happens to it on the desk of Governor Greg Abbott. Can he line item veto anything on that?
He can. When it comes to the budget piece, he can. I don't suspect that he will, but he can.
A lot of things in play.
A lot of things in play. I mean, when it comes to HB3, though, I'm not worried about the veto pen. I mean, there are other bills that people have, other bills that I have that, you know, everyone, you're not safe until the clock strikes, until the last day. But on HB3, I think we're fine.
Yeah, you never know. It was, what, three sessions ago that Governor Greg Abbott vetoed what was in the 85th session, he vetoed 51 bills, and before that, 44 bills. But in the most recent one, 7 bills, so you don't know.
You just don't know.
Could be anything.
Right.
So I got an email from R. Oman. I am worried that the legislature caved, and instead of giving teachers a straight from the state pay increase, they handed money over to districts who are poor custodians of any dollars. They waste it. They spend too much on brick and mortar, and none of it is going to the front line necessarily and rewarding great teachers who have had a great impact on students.
I would disagree with most of that.
Brick and mortar comes from a totally different source.
It comes from a different source. In fact, what's interesting about this budget when it comes to teachers is, so the teacher pay increase actually says you have to spend more and give more to teachers who've been teaching for 6 years or more. That's number one. Number two is a whole separate allotment that if districts want to, they don't have to, they can identify who their best teachers are, pay them more, and then pay them even more to go to the schools that are hard to staff or have a high concentration of poor kids, or they're in rural, sparse, hard to staff schools as well. So in that way, I disagree. I understand that people may have wanted the original $5,000, but that was just a political tactic by the lieutenant governor to force a conversation. $5,000 across the board, unless you're getting a tremendous amount of money, more than we have and are spending now, let's say from the federal government, you can't do that because these districts are so differently situated. Some of them are starting their teachers off at $35,000. Some of them are starting their teachers off at $60,000. For some of these districts, if you say you have to pay them this much and you don't have a giant appropriation that you can maintain over time, it results in a cut. So every teacher should get an increase, and there's opportunity to get more. But if we want to do something like they deserve, $5,000, $8,000, $15,000, it has to be a collective effort between the federal government and the state to put billions and billions of dollars in that then stay and remain. Otherwise, as we've seen in the past, and this was my biggest fear, is that it would be a grant. In other words, here's a $3,000 or $4,000 bonus that then disappears the next year. What we want to do, what I want to do, is raise their pay and keep it up and then raise it beyond that. We didn't have the horses to get there.
Right. But the concern from some folks, like this email writer, is that the money's going to go to administrators.
That's a fair point. And to sort of agree with the person who wrote in, that has happened in the past. In HB 3 is specific language that says you have to spend the money this way. And then if you don't, then you don't get it. So there is that.
And there'll be follow-up.
Right, of course.
Let's go to Paul on the phones. And Paul, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Hey, Paul, you there?
Yes, Representative Bernal.
Yes, sir.
Congratulations on making an impact. I ran against you in your first election in 2015. I'm happy to see you succeed and have an effect on the legislature.
I appreciate that.
I'm interested in outcomes. How are people in San Antonio, how are taxpayers in Texas going to know they're getting something for their $11 billion investment in education?
I think the people you ask are the students, the parents, and the educators. Right now, if you want to measure it by test scores, you know, you can do that. I don't suggest that. But I think that the way that you measure it is by the experience of the educators. They will tell us whether or not it's working or not, and they will tell us whether or not what we're doing isn't working or what we need to change. But I'm always cautious against looking for one specific metric to tell us that something is working, because that one metric we have is the STAR test, and that's something I'm not comfortable with. That being said, there are a variety of other assessments that different students take around the state that will give us an idea as to whether or not our investment is working. But if you're looking for one, I would caution against it. Again, if the politicians run around and say, this is a big win, this is great for Texas, students and teachers should be happy. And in 2 years, students and teachers are not, or they're not happier, then so we know what to do.
There was some bills that were floated asking for readability studies for the STAR test.
Well, one of them was mine.
And what happened on that?
Well, it didn't get out of the Senate.
So why was it an issue?
It was an issue because a number of superintendents raised this idea that maybe the STAR test is not properly aligned to what everyone understands to be, let's say, third grade reading, for example. Right, that you may have a STAR test that is designed to measure third grade reading, but is scored like it's supposed to measure fifth grade reading. There's a concern that it's misaligned. So I had a bill to study it and to figure out what was going on. The bill died in the Senate. However, we did put the readability study into HB 3. So HB 3 has a readability study in it. It is funding for readability study, and we should get the results of that study by the end of the year this year.
The STAR test and its results and its impact on school districts is no small thing.
Right.
It decides if some schools are going to be closed or not.
That's right.
And to have such a critical misalignment, it makes you wonder as if the game has been rigged against school districts.
That's exactly right. That's exactly the concern, and that's exactly what we get to the bottom to. That's why, to the caller, I was saying, let's be careful about demanding a one-size-fits-all assessment, because no such thing really exists. That being said, I think that what we're doing with the STAR test now, which is breaking it up into smaller pieces, using it as a diagnostic, making sure the last test isn't summative, is a step in the right direction. There's still work to be done, but I think we've closer now than we've been for a while.
So there's a lot stuffed into the HB3 burrito.
A lot.
And one of them is free full-day pre-K?
There is money for schools and districts to expand their pre-K offering to high-quality full-day pre-K. That's right.
And tell me more about that. What's that going to look like?
Well, it's going to look different for each district. Some districts have already been offering full-day pre-K, so it allows them to fortify those services, then use the money they were spending on other things like first, second, third grade. There are some districts that weren't offering full-day pre-K, and they can now. And there are some districts that want to offer full-day pre-K, but they don't have the facilities to do it. And so what this does is say, okay, you can focus on your kindergarten kids, your first graders, your second graders, and at the same time, get yourself in position to then offer full-day high-quality pre-K. So there's flexibility. It's supposed to get everybody there, but we recognize it can happen overnight.
Do we still need pre-K for SA?
I think we will, but we'll also have to see what this looks like. You know, one of the big complaints about pre-K for SA is that it couldn't get to everybody. You hear that all the time. And what this does is it's full-day high-quality pre-K for all qualifying four-year-olds, which means that right at the line, right at the cutoff, there's a whole community of kids that still aren't getting served. Pre-K for SA, and I'm sure it's a longer conversation, pre-K for SA to some degree can help fill that gap. Because you must have talked to people who are saying, I'm just not poor enough to qualify, right? And right. That is a heartbreak because those people are not wealthy by any means. So the idea that districts' pre-existing programs, that this new allotment and that pre-K for SA can work together to fill in all the gaps, I mean, that's a bright future for our city.
And also pre-K for SA does a lot more than provide pre-K. It does a lot of teacher training and stuff locally and grant gathering. I'm going to get this other caller before I run out of time. Sorry about to cut you off there. But Amy, right. Hey, Amy, welcome to The Source. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to ask a question about the teacher retirement service. I heard recently earlier in this year, just because I was listening to one of Beth O'Rourke's speeches, he said that TRS hasn't taken into account the cost of living and they haven't adjusted the rates for teachers based on that. So I wanted to find out if that's something that the state legislators are able to have influence over, or is that a private, thing that teachers need to advocate for on their own?
Well, it's both. In other words, the legislature can do that. To some degree, they did not, and they have not yet. And so that is something that teachers should continue, and retired teachers should continue to fight for. What did happen this session is that there was money put in to make sure that TRS is actuarially sound. In other words, it's not going to fall apart, that we're not worried about it dissolving. The second thing they did was allow for teachers to get a 13th check. In other words, whatever you're getting monthly, you should get one more check in this year of that amount up to $2,000. So that's some way to help a little bit with the lack of a COLA, but that is something that we haven't got to yet. Hopefully it's something we do soon. I think a lot of us are frustrated we haven't touched that yet, but to answer your question, yes and yes.
What about the shortfall in the overall teacher retirement plan fund? I mean, doesn't there a shortfall if they look at the entirety of the plan?
Well, I think part of what I'm saying is that there was money put in to make sure that there's no shortfall, to make sure it doesn't fall apart, but that doesn't necessarily account for the COLA piece, the cost of living piece. Now, I can say the 13th check should help with that, and sure, it should help with that, but that's not the same thing as a proper month-to-month adjustment. We still need to do that.
Also, help me understand this part of the bill, the education bill. There's money for taking things like the SAT and ACT.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
And the GED, which was one of my bills I was able to sneak into the
It's not sneak in. It is a transparent and full-throttled process.
I used my position at the table to close that gap. So, yes, we're going to pay for the first administration.
Because this is expensive. These are expensive tests.
They are expensive tests, but we're going to pay for the ACT and the SAT for graduating seniors, but a lot of what HB3 does also helps out people who are doing credit recovery and dropout prevention. And so I said, if we're going to do that, why not also pay for the first administration of the high school equivalency? It's not just the GED. There's actually three or four tests. So why not pay for that as well? So we got that through. So it's the ACT, the SAT, and the high school equivalency as well.
And so this should result in more people getting a high school equivalency and also more students taking those college entrance exams.
And more students getting into college, absolutely.
And more metrics and seeing how well we're doing other than that. All right, I want to thank you, Diego Bernal, House District Representative for District 123 here in San Antonio. Great talking with you, and we'll be keeping up with you as things progress and see what happens with that veto pen. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks so much for tuning us in.
Thank you.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams. Direction provided by News Director Dan Katz. Technical assistance provided by Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.